ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमः भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 16 अ डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ जम्बू द्वीप टेक्स्ट 2021। The mud on both banks of the river Jambu Nadi being moistened by the flowing juice and then dried by the air and the sunshine produces huge quantities of gold called Jambu Nada. The denizens of heaven use this gold for various kinds of ornaments. Therefore, all the inhabitants of the heavenly planets and their youthful wives were fully decorated with golden helmets, bangles, and belts, and thus they enjoy life. Purport. By the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the rivers on some planets produce gold on their banks. The poor inhabitants of this earth, because of their incomplete knowledge, are captivated by a so-called Bhagawan who can produce a small quantity of gold. However, it is understood that in a higher planetary system in this material world, the mud on the banks of the Jambu Nadi mixes with Jambu juice, reacts with the sunshine in the air, and automatically produces huge quantities of gold. Thus, the men and women are decorated there by various golden ornaments, and they look very nice. Unfortunately, on Earth, there is such a scarcity of gold that the governments of the world try to keep it in reserve and issue paper currency. Because that currency is not backed up by gold, the paper they distribute as money is worthless. But nevertheless, the people on Earth are very proud of material advancement. In modern times, girls and ladies have ornaments made of plastic instead of gold, and plastic utensils are used instead of golden ones, yet people are very proud of their material wealth. Therefore, the people of this age are described as mandasu mandamatayo mandabhagya yupadruta. In other words, they are extremely bad and slow to understand the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have been described as sumandamataya because their conceptions are so crippled that they accept a bluffer who produces a little gold to be God. Because they have no gold in their possession, they are actually poverty-stricken and therefore are considered unfortunate. Sometimes these unfortunate people want to be promoted to the heavenly planets to achieve fortunate positions as described in this verse. But pure devotees of the Lord are not at all interested in such opulence. Indeed, devotees sometimes compare the color of gold to that of bright golden stool. See, Caitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed devotees not to be allured by golden ornaments and beautifully decorated women. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. A devotee should not be allured by gold, beautiful women, or the prestige of having many followers. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore confidentially prayed, Mama Janmani Janmani Ishvare Bhavatad Bhakti Ahai Tukhi Tvai. My Lord, please bless me with your devotional service. I do not want anything else. A devotee may be prayed to be delivered from this material world. That is his only aspiration. Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram Patitam Mam Vishame Bhavam Bhudo. Kripaya tava pada pankaja stitatuli sadrasam vichintaya. The humble devotee prays to the Lord, kindly pick me up from the material world, which is full of varieties of material opulence, and keep me under the shelter of your lotus feet. Srila Narottam Das Thakur prays, Haha Prabhu Nanda Sutta Vrishabhanu Sutta Yutta Karuna Kuraho Ebhar Narottama dasakoi nat te liba ranga pai. Toma vine kache amar. O my Lord, O son of Nara, O son of Nanda Maharaj, now you are standing before me with your consort, the daughter of Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani. Kindly accept me as the dust of your lotus feet. Please do not kick me away, for I have no other shelter. Similarly, Prabodhananda Saraswati indicates that the position of the demigods, who are decorated with golden helmets and other ornaments, is no better than a phantasmagoria. Tri Dasyapur Akasha Pushpayate. A devotee is never lured by such opulences. He simply aspires to become the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. Today you are learning about the mud on the banks of the river Jambu Nadi. And you are hearing of the natural process by which that mud is moistened by flowing juice from the fruits that are the size of elephants but have very tiny seeds. And those fruits, as we discussed yesterday, the size of elephants, fall from a distance of 8,800 miles. And then they hit the ground and flood the entire land of Ilavrata with juice. So the mud on the banks of the river Jambu Nadi is moistened by that juice and then dried by the air and sunshine. And the result is automatically huge quantities of gold are produced. The residents of the heavenly planets use this gold for ornaments. They're all nicely decorated with both the men and women with golden helmets, bangles, and belts. And thus, they enjoy life. Now, you have to understand the context. When the Bhagavatam is saying, and thus they enjoy life, it's in the relative context. Because, as we all know, there is no enjoyment in the material world, right? So although it says that the demigods thus enjoy life, you know they're not actually enjoying, right? So then why does the Bhagavatam say this? Within the context of the heavenly planets, they're enjoying. But from the standpoint of Bhagavad Dharma, they're not enjoying. A true devotee, recognizes no pleasure except Krishna's pleasure. Indeed, a true devotee has no other means of sensing pleasure or even conceiving of what is pleasure except for thinking of Krishna's pleasure. That is the true standard of pleasure thinking. The heavenly planets, as we said yesterday, have devotees who are attached to material enjoyment and control, while at the same time understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cause of all causes. At least they understand Narayan. So, because of pious activities, they're allowed facilities for material enjoyment that cannot be conceived of on earth. Just like if you go to various parts of this planet, which Prabhupada speaks about so disparagingly in the purport. He talks about the poor inhabitants of this earth are captivated by a so-called Bhagawan who can produce a small quantity of gold. Elsewhere he says, unfortunately on earth there is such a scarcity of gold that the governments issue paper currency. And then he talks about the plastic ornaments, the plastic utensils, and still people are very proud of their material wealth. If you go to different parts of this world, you will find different levels of enjoyment. And that lets you know that on different planets, there are different levels of enjoyment. Some places in this world are renowned for suffering. Other places are renowned for enjoyment. You may be surprised to know that your city right here is being advertised throughout the world as the latest and greatest and foremost place for material enjoyment. in both the New York Times, and I've seen so many airlines magazines talking about Mumbai. Mm-hmm. One description was very graphic. You know, when there's a volcano exploding, the lava, the hot lava, comes from a central point under the earth and then shoots out through the volcano and spreads all over the land. So Mumbai was described as the molten epicenter of Asian hedonism. That was a compliment. It's no longer a criticism to say someone is a hedonist. Such miserable, minute, so-called pleasures that the Earth residents know about are glorified far out of their capacity. Yet, what do the demigods do? They have activities of enjoyment that an Earthling could not conceive of in terms of the level of material pleasure. Still, whether it's the pleasure of the lower planets, the middle planets, or the heavenly planets, a true devotee is not interested. Because, as we were explaining yesterday, the taste, the bhakti rasa taste, is so incomparable that a devotee will readily engage in any so-called menial service, knowing that Krishna can be pleased in that way. Actually, the devotee is not really thinking, I shall get a particular taste. A true devotee is thinking, how can Krishna best be served? How to distribute an experience of this taste? Yesterday, Srila Radhanath Maharaj was telling me about his trip to Amritsar, the Golden Temple, and the taste of selfless service. More and more throughout the world, people are distressed by their fast race of trying to accumulate material wealth, trying to advance materially, but they don't know what to do. Therefore, they're thinking now. Wealthy people, successful people are thinking, is there another taste I can have? Mm-hmm. How do I do something meaningful for the world? Things always go through cycles. So now, some people are waking up that the cycle of intense materialistic pursuit is not what they want to do with their life. But what else should they do? How do they direct themselves? How do they fulfill themselves? What should they do with their immense energies, their immense resources, their immense skills? They have no idea. We're not going to offer them the pleasures of the heavenly planets. But what else do we have to offer people except the incomparable taste of service to Krishna, in which the devotee is simply thinking, how can Krishna better be served? How can I better use my energies, my talents, all for Krishna's pleasure? In one sense, many people have gone from one extreme and now they're looking for another. Just like the third richest man in the world I was speaking of at our program two nights ago. He presents himself as the pinnacle of success and happiness. He says quite boldly, I am a very happy man. I am worth $13 billion. I can have whatever I want. I heartily recommend this to everyone. I can have, why an airplane? I can have a whole airport. I can have, why a yacht? I can have a whole harbor. I can have whatever I want. So I was explaining. You would think, because he's worth $13 billion, he would be so satisfied. Many of you would think, if I had $13 billion, I would not be striving for more. I would be satisfied with what I have. But what is the thing that disturbs this number three wealthy man the most? When the number two wealthy man is glorified, he can't tolerate it. Why are they always talking about him? Why not me? Why does he get all the attention? He gets so disturbed by it. Now you're thinking, if I had 13 billion, nothing would bother me. Of course, a devotee knows what to do with 13 billion. But from the viewpoint of an ordinary person, they'll actually think like that. I'll get 13 billion. I would not want more. I would be completely peaceful, equipoised, beyond all happiness and distress. No, it doesn't work like that. The more you get, the more your desires increase. And the less you can tolerate any material inconvenience. There's something about being within the modes of material nature that will not let you have peace. When will we understand that? Lord Chaitanya explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. Everyone wants peace. The karmic workers, they actually want peace. They think that their money, their material success will bring inner peace, inner fulfillment. They don't get it. Mystic yogis think by their siddhis, by their mystic powers, even tiny mystic powers like producing a little bit of gold in your hand. They think, this will bring me peace. They don't get it. Those who aspire for liberation from material existence, they think that is the ultimate peace formula. They don't get peace. Our Siddhanta is the only ones who get peace are the Krishna Bhaktas. Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Shanta. Because the Krishna Bhakta is simply thinking, what is Krishna's enjoyment? How can Krishna enjoy? What can I do to contribute more to the Lord's pleasure? That is the only peace that exists. So now you have people, as always, clamoring, let us have world peace, let us not have war, let us have peaceful economic development. There's no such thing as peaceful economic development or peaceful sense gratification. This is the only ideology of the world today. World peace through sense gratification and economic development. If you just engage in those activities, some or other, everything will be all right. You'll feel good. The rest of the world will be a better place. It's not happening. And many people are waking up to the fact. I've had everything, and now I realize I have nothing. Regardless of the boasts of persons like the third richest man in the world, I am a very happy man. I recommend this to everyone. Anyone who knows him understands he's a very lonely man. His wealth cannot bring him inner peace and contentment. He can't keep a steady partner. He can't keep a steady wife. He's just possessed by so many idiosyncrasies. No one can deal with him. Yet he's broadcasting to the world, I'm a very happy man. I heartily recommend this to everyone. I'm worth 13 billion U.S. And foolish persons believe that. It is possible to explain to people that their affluence will cause them so many problems. Many people are ready to hear this now. Because this wave of accumulation has been going on for at least a century. And now some people are starting to think, what has it brought us? We're destroying the earth. We're destroying nature. We're destroying ourselves. At our program two nights ago, I was explaining one statistic that although the gross national product of so many developed countries has soared, skyrocketed since World War II, the psychological level of happiness has not increased in the slightest. In fact, many say it's going down. So the wealth has skyrocketed, but the level of happiness and satisfaction, even as materially measured, has remained the same. So that shows you, what was all the endeavor for? Why work so hard? Why go through so much stress when you're not going to be the slightest bit more happy by all this endeavor? Of course, we know the conclusion of Narada Muni in Bhagavatam. Tasyaiva heta prayate kovida. If you're actually a kavi, a wise person, you don't endeavor for anything that's available from the lower planetary system to the upper planetary system. You've got nothing to do with any of those kind of endeavors. Whether it's Jambu Dweep, the gold there, the fruits the size of elephants that fall 8,800 miles and break apart and spread juice everywhere. Someone who's actually wise is not interested in anything that's available within the three worlds. Understanding, talabhyate dukkhavat, just as time brings distress, time will also bring your happiness. Why endeavor for it? A simple axiomatic truth that Srila Prabhupada would always explain. No one endeavors for distress. I'm sure no one in this room, in the material part of their life, has ever struggled to get distress. I'm going to work hard to be miserable. I've got to come up with a new plan how to be miserable. No one here has ever done that. Everyone has struggled for happiness. But the point of Narada Muni is, just as the distress comes without your endeavoring, similarly the happiness will come without your endeavoring. So what to do then? Just sit around and do nothing? No, you endeavor for that thing which is not available within the three worlds, from the lower planets to the highest planets. You're endeavoring for bhakti rasa. That taste of bhakti rasa is not part of the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems in terms of being a material component. Bhakti rasa is not composed of the three modes of material nature. So someone who's actually a kavi, Narada Muni says, goes for that, endeavors for that thing which is not a product of material existence. More and more people are willing to hear this. As devotees of Lord Chaitanya, we go on with our preaching and teaching, education, instruction in any circumstance, whether the people think now is the time to listen or whether they think now is the time not to listen. We go on in all circumstances. Srila Prabhupada explained that an expert business person is one who can make a profit at any stage of the economy, whether the price is going up or down. If you are a business person who only makes a profit when the price of things is going up, then according to that standard, you're actually not a fully qualified business person. You also have to know how to make a profit when the price is going down. So, a representative of Lord Chaitanya knows how in any season, at any stage of the material realizations of humanity, how to present Krishna consciousness, and in some way, some people will come forward. It is a fact that when people are distressed, they are more ready to hear. That's just the way it is. And then, when there's distress, many of them will blame God. Although it is a fact that they're more able to listen to spiritual instruction when they're distressed. I'll give you an example. One Catholic bishop told me that in Australia, and he said it's pretty much the same, it was pretty much the same in the USA and other countries, right before World War II, if you wanted to be a monk or a nun, you went on a waiting list. So many people wanted to be a monk or a nun. Why? They had just gotten through World War I, and World War II was looming just around the corner, and an intelligent person couldn't handle this. I don't believe it. We just slaughtered 17 million people in World War I. Now, a few years later, here we are, on the verge of World War II. I can't live in this kind of world. It doesn't make sense to me. I'd rather be a monk or a nun. So there were long waiting lists for the Catholic monasteries and nunneries. And then the same thing happened after World War II was finished. So many soldiers returned, having seen horrible things, having seen atrocities, having seen countless persons slaughtered, even tortured. So they came back to their home countries and decided, I don't want to have anything to do with material existence. I'm going to be a monk. I'm going to be a nun. So again, there were long waiting lists to be a monk or a nun. And the Catholic Church was very rigorous. They would analyze each candidate because they had so many to choose from. But that all ended once economic prosperity set in and apparent peace. There was no longer just one huge world war. There were many little wars, and economies were expanding. And so by the time the 60s came around, the Catholic Church, in terms of monks and nuns, was going out of business. And then when the hippie countercultural times started in the 60s, that was the end. What was the boom time for the Hare Krishna movement in the USA was the end of the world for the Catholic Church. So these phases are always happening in material existence. Somehow or other, out of compassion, devotees of Lord Chaitanya continue with their efforts how to reach people with the message of bhakti rasa, the taste of bhakti rasa. Still, it is a fact that certain times motivate people to be more spiritually inquisitive. There'll always, however, be some persons who are just beyond what's happening in the world and are just looking for the answers. And also, there'll always be devotees who, due to their dedication to Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, can crack through any kind of temporary season or mentality that's present in the material world. Still, it is so that when there are certain circumstances in the world, people are more spiritually curious. Now, what about the heavenly planets? The Bhagavatam says that the smart demigods simply aspire to take birth on earth, particularly in Bharat Varsh, because they say the sense gratification on the heavenly planets is so intense, it's difficult to be Krishna conscious. They pray in the fifth canto that if at all we have any punya, any pious activities left in our bank account, let us take birth on earth. And in this way, we can become Krishna conscious much more easily and go back to Godhead after a short human life. Comparatively, as you know, the demigod lifespan is much longer. So the smart demigods are calculating like that. A short lifespan on earth where it's obvious there are such things as material miseries. And then you go back to Godhead. Whereas on the heavenly planets, you can so easily forget Krishna. Just like Nalakuva and Manigriva. They were sons of Kuvera, but they forgot how to live a pious life, how to live as a deva, asura. They forgot all about that. our living conditions do affect people. Not a transcendentalist, but so many people are not transcendentalists, and they become very influenced by the atmosphere they live in. Just like now, Mumbai is described as the molten epicenter of Asian hedonism. That's going to affect people. For a transcendental devotee, his business is the same in all circumstances. But for the ordinary person, they become bewildered by all of this. What's happening? Where did the past go? What will the future bring? How do you behave now? What are the standards? Should there be tradition? Should there not? In this way, people are being shaken. And they're offered, in this insecurity, they're offered the easy solution. Just let your senses go uncontrolled, and then you'll find the peace and satisfaction you want. Such a thing has never happened. It's only an idea that's broadcast to people's minds. There has never been happiness and peace without sense control. Still, the idea is so attractive in this Kali Yuga. And therefore, masses of people have to go through the suffering process due to all this false propaganda. How will they do otherwise? Even their suffering, unless they get a taste of bhakti rasa, the suffering will just make them cynical. Ah, life is just about suffering. It's all an illusion. What can you do? If they get a taste of bhakti rasa, then all of a sudden a completely different universe opens up to them. This is the great contribution of the Hare Krishna movement. How to give people that taste in which all of a sudden they start thinking there's a whole other realm of behavior possible. Otherwise they don't know. There's a whole other realm of relationships possible. My life can have a completely different goal. Our devotees play such an important part in distributing this reality of bhakti rasa. When people come in contact with a devotee, then, by Krishna's arrangement, they can perceive something else exists. I should organize my life to get that something else. I don't know exactly what it is, but I can sense there's something else. There's a different flavor that can be had, which will actually heal my horribly burnt heart. Just like we were speaking yesterday, Lord Chaitanya is known as Gaura Megha, the cloud, Gaura. And he rains down his merciful glance, and all the devotees become enlivened. Devotees of Lord Chaitanya, they suffer in separation when he goes to Vrindavan or he goes to South India or like that. The ordinary people, they're suffering from material desires. No other purpose of life is now given. Forget religion. Forget philosophy. The philosophy departments in universities are closing. No one takes a philosophy major seriously anymore. I know in New Zealand, the university 2 years ago graduated two philosophy majors. And I know one of them is a house painter. The other is a clerk in the store. The adage is, philosophy. How are you going to make money with that? Everything is seen in terms of how your income can increase. And this attitude is destroying the world. And many people know it, but they don't understand how else to be. Even they may have some guilt that this kind of society can't go on. Still, they don't know what else to do. When they meet a devotee, when they interact with devotees, then suddenly a different world opens up to them. They can see possibilities for human existence that they never knew before. They can see possibilities for culture that they were never aware of before. They finally can see possibilities for happiness. Of course, it takes a while for them to understand that the standard of pure devotion is such that a devotee never thinks of his or her own happiness. The devotee is simply focused on what is Krishna doing now? How can Krishna enjoy more? The graphic example is when Krishna leaves his village and goes to the forest during the day. His consorts are simply meditating on his feet. How are those feet feeling, touching the rocks and pebbles on the floor of the forest? How they should not be pained in any slight way. Those feet are, we know, we have personal experience how soft those feet are. And we know those feet, how they could be feeling now walking in the forest there. So this is how a devotee is thinking. Mother Yashoda, when Krishna is wandering throughout Vrindavan as a little boy, she's in anxiety. There are so many sharp tools on the ground. There could be fire somewhere. There could be reptiles or so many things that could harm the little boy. And he's just crawling here and there. She's in anxiety. That anxiety of pure selflessness. But of course, it is not material anxiety. Material anxiety comes from self-centeredness. What about me and my plans? They're in danger. Maybe you can remember how that feels. What about me and my ideas, me and my hopes? They're threatened. There's a problem in the execution of my desires. This is anxiety. Who is in the way of my plans, my enjoyment? How dare that happen? Why won't the world have peace so I can enjoy? I remember when I was a little boy, 12 years old, and I looked at the newspaper, and it talked about how the U.S. Air Force and Navy were attacking North Vietnam because the North Vietnamese had sent some little boats to attack the U.S. fleet. So therefore, the U.S. fleet retaliated and launched an attack. And I remember thinking as a 12-year-old boy, why are they doing this to the world? Why can't the world be peaceful so I can have a nice time? Why are they making these wars? Why are the circumstances being upset so that I will grow up in a world that is so disturbed? Why can't they just cool it so that I can realize my plans? This is the normal way people think. Very selfish. Let there be world peace and happiness for me and the people I know. The more you are in relation to my body, the more I care for you. Bhagavatam opens your vision beyond this tiny planet. You start thinking of the demigods. How are they feeling? What are they doing? You become aware of the lower planets. What are they doing? How are they feeling? And most importantly, you become aware of even beyond Vaikuntha. How are the Brijbasis feeling? How are they motivated? What is their mentality? In this way, a devotee has such extraordinarily, incomparably wide vision. You understand how all the living entities in all parts of the material world and spiritual world, you understand their motivations, you understand how they're thinking. Where else will we get such extraordinary understanding and awareness? Any devotee who reads Bhagavatam can be so confident. I know what goes on in the lower planets, middle planets, upper planets, Vaikuntha and beyond. Where else are people going to get such education? Once you understand the movements of the living entities in the material and spiritual world, then you can understand properly how to act in such a way that you don't cause a disturbance, and positively put, you increase the storehouse of love of God. This is the sublime calling for being a devotee. Not only do you stop causing disturbances, for a while that was very popular. People were very, in the West, were very attracted to Buddhism because they felt, in this way I'll learn how not to disturb myself and how not to disturb others. In Australia, it used to be that 10 years ago, Buddhism was the fastest growing religion. Why? Because everyone could easily say, every young person could easily say, I'm a Buddhist. I'm trying to kill all desire. I'm trying to destroy all ego. It was a very cool thing to say. No one ever did it, though. In Los Angeles, Dwaita Chandra of Torchlight Publishing was telling me that the Buddhist and the New Age flood is over. He deals with the biggest metaphysical bookshops in Los Angeles. And for years, in the 80s, 90s, they were telling him, we're just selling New Age books and Buddhist books. People want to stop desire. They want to kill all ego. Now what did they tell him? It's all out of style. Everyone is interested in Hinduism again. Everyone's interested in books from India. It's all come full swing. What was popular in the 60s and 70s now is back again. They've gone through the whole Buddhist wave, the New Age wave, and they're back to buying things about India again. So in this way, life in the material world means up, down, and all around. A devotee is not primarily caught up in these things. We take a little bit of note in order to administer the medicine of Krishna consciousness properly. But our vision is on Narada Muni's instruction, tasyaiva heto prayate kovido. If you're actually a kavi, you're not disturbed by anything that goes on in Trigunamayi. You don't want anything that the upper, middle, or lower planets can offer. You don't want anything that time can deliver. It is time that delivers happiness and distress. The devotee wants something else. Krishna bhakta nishkam. Ataiva janta. The devotee simply wants Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, the devotee is peaceful. This peace is the most elusive thing now. Many people have everything, although still, in so many parts of the world, people don't have anything at all. But the fact has been clearly proven. You can have everything. You can be the third richest man in the world, and you're still full of anxiety. You're lonely. Now what else to do if you're an intelligent person? What else do you do with your life? How can you just go on repeating the same path of dissatisfaction and emptiness? Because people don't know an alternative, their lives are now becoming full of despair. We've done everything. Wild sense gratification, intoxication, intense money-making pursuits. And we just see that the world is becoming worse and worse, people are becoming more miserable, and we're playing a part in all that? Oh, no. That's the mentality. Oh, no. I'm contributing to this mess? But what else can I do? Where can I turn? What do I do with my skills? What do I do with my knowledge I've learned in school? What do I do with my contacts? So they're desperate. And here, the Vaishnavas have something that's not available in any of the three worlds. They have something beyond the heavenly planets, beyond Vaikuntha. How are the people going to taste that? How are they going to see that? The devotees want to make this world of bhakti rasa apparent to the people as much as possible that can, as much as can be detected by material senses. It is possible they can detect something. They always are looking for motivation. What's behind all this? What's your psychology? What makes you tick? That's very, how do you say, that's the way to live these days. Always understand people's motivations, what makes them tick. Why are you doing what you're doing? Let them do that to devotees. That will be the perfection of their analyses. When they apply it to their material culture, all they see is profit motivation, exploitation motivation, hedonistic motivation. That's all they can see now, because that's all that there is. Many people are becoming smart enough to understand, even so-called philanthropy and charity, how much has it really done? At the same time, what else can you do except give a portion of your income to charity and hope something good happens? Hope that, you know, perhaps 50% of the money you give to charity will actually go to the purpose of helping the people. And, well, maybe 50% will go to the staff into their pockets, but, you know, at least they're trying to do a good thing. That's about as best as it gets these days. We can make such an extraordinary contribution. And it's actually very simple how to do it. We should not become so complex, just as the world has become so complex. Our business is bhakti rasa. A taste that anyone can have, rich or poor, male or female, young or old, a taste that cannot be taxed. It can't be stolen from you. You can only destroy it by making offenses. This is our great heritage. This is our great wealth. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. There's the difference you had explained at the beginning of your class, how the devotee doesn't desire to enjoy for his own sake, but he only enjoys when Krishna is enjoying. And the endeavor for bhakti ras, or the taste for devotional service, is very enjoyable. So how to know when you're endeavoring for your own sense gratification versus the pleasure of Krishna?
It's not that if devotees are miserable, that means they're simply thinking of Krishna's pleasure. Actually, the acharyas explain that if, while trying to satisfy Krishna, you also notice that you're happy, that's not a fault. You just take it as it comes, but it's not your intense meditation that I'm doing this to be happy. But if it happens, but you don't want that to disturb your service, just like Daruka, he's fanning Krishna, Narayan and Vaikuntha, and he became ecstatic. He wanted to check that ecstasy because it was getting in the way, he felt, of his service. He just wanted to go on fanning without ecstasy disturbing him. That's the standard of devotion that attracts us. The barrier in our mind is that what will happen to me if I simply think of Krishna's pleasure? This is the mental impediment we have. because we're so attached to doing things for our own purposes, it requires a lot of guidance to practice bhakti, especially because of these material surroundings, which are so intensely selfish. It's hard to imagine how I'll be happy without thinking of my own pleasure. But under proper guidance, you can begin to see what your motivations are, especially if you're in good association while getting that guidance. You'll be able to see what your motivations are. And you'll see examples of devotees who are simply thinking of Krishna's pleasure and serving the other devotees. And you'll see the taste. You'll be attracted. So it's not as difficult as it sounds. Often, devotees are so busy that they really don't have time to notice, am I happy or am I not? There's a level of life beyond that, constantly pulling out like a bliss meter and taking a reading. How do I feel right now? Am I truly blissful, like all the devotees say you're supposed to be? I don't feel so blissful this morning. Better to be so busy that you don't have time to do that. It's possible. And those are the times that you'll look back on in your life and savor. I was so busy in Krishna's service, I wasn't even noticing whether I was happy or not. That is the exalted state of life. It is possible, very easily. Yes.
Maharaj, some people may say, we know that there are problems in life, but let's just face it, let's just work very hard. And you religious people are just weak people who try to escape the real problems of life. You hide in your monasteries, in your temples, in your ashrams, because you haven't got that courage to face it. You just, you know, hide behind God. How would you speak to such people?
There's a variety of ways you can address that point. Samsara dhavana nalita loka. There's a blazing fire. Your house is on fire. And you race out of your house to escape the blazing fire in your house. And then as soon as you get to the street, everyone criticizes you. Why are you escaping? Go back in. Go through the burning experience. An intelligent person runs away from a fire. Now, if you don't know it's a fire, then there'll be some debate. Why are you running away? Why are you escaping? At one of our preaching centers in New Zealand, one devotee's former friends came to visit her. When she was in her late teens and early 20s, times of extreme wildness. So, at that time, when they came to visit her, she was 26. And they were about 25, 26. So they walked in and they sat down and talked to her. I hadn't seen her for a few years since she had become Krishna conscious. They said, you know, you look truly happy. We've got to admit that. You look so happy. And what have we been doing since you've been gone? We're just miserable. But we stuck with it. You escaped. That you said that. We're going through it all. You ran away from it. They already just finished telling her she was so happy and they were miserable. But then they began to chastise her. We're sticking with the misery. We're going through it. You escaped. In this way, the illusory energy bestows a false sense of honor upon suffering and material existence. They call it the learning process, although no one ever knows what they're supposed to learn. I hear this all the time. Life's a learning process. You've just got to go through it and let the lessons come to you. Nature is designing your lessons. Nature is just giving you instruction. So just live life as you feel, and nature will teach you. You'll learn whatever you're supposed to learn. I always ask, well, what is the lesson? What is the lesson? No one can say. What does Krishna say is the lesson in Bhagavad Gita? Muta janmini janmini. Birth after birth, you'll be a fool. That's the lesson. You suffer and never figure out why you're suffering. So these persons were criticizing this devotee. We know you're happy, but you escaped. We know we're suffering, but we're going through it all. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, thank you, Maharaj. I wanted to ask, I was thinking lately, because I'm reading that part of Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, also Lord Kapiladeva explains to Mother Devahuti how the living entity gets into the material world. And I was also thinking, even from before, that how it is possible, now we've heard what is the enjoyment in the heavenly planets, and what... let's say material pleasure they get from that, and how we can see how we get attached to this material pleasure and how we don't want to let it go. So I was thinking, in the spiritual world we heard that it's this here enjoyment is not even a slight drop comparing to the enjoyment in the spiritual world. So how does the living entity, it is explained in Bhagavatam in many occasions, like that we can turn our back to Krishna, and then that's how we get into this material world. For example, Kapiladev says to Devahuti that when the living entity thinks, why not Krishna? Why Krishna? Why not me? Then the Krishna says, all right, you can try. But I'm thinking like, how it is possible? Because the living entity in that position is Satchitananda. And plus he's in association with Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is like nothing can compare to the pleasure which he is giving. So how it is possible that the living entity can, in such a position, think of something other than come to this world? Thank you.
I will answer that question in two ways. First of all, understand you are dealing with a difficult area of understanding how it is that the living entity turned his back on Krishna. In one sense it's difficult, in another sense it's not. If you always think about how Srila Prabhupada constantly harped upon the fact that you have independence. Independence means to use or misuse. There can't be love without independence. In order for there to be the free flow of love, there has to be the possibility of choice. You don't want any forced love, do you? You don't want anyone who's forced to have a relationship with you. So therefore, there's the possibility of misusing your independence. Now let's consider the fact that this is a difficult area, and probably the safest thing to do in these very difficult areas of Krishna conscious knowledge is to repeat what the Acharya has said. This question was asked to Srila Prabhupada in France in 1976. It actually was asked to him many times, and every time he said the same thing. But this time in France in 1976, he went a little bit further. The devotees were pushing him. They use the example of a woman and her husband. If the woman is satisfied with her husband or the husband is satisfied with the wife, they don't look elsewhere. But if we were with Krishna and we were satisfied with Krishna, of course we were satisfied with Krishna. How could you not be satisfied if you were with Krishna? Then how did we become tired of Krishna? How is that possible? So they thought they had Prabhupada. They were really pushing it. We're going to get the answer now. Just like sometimes today, devotees still become, they get very perplexed by this issue. Oh, Prabhupada gave a very wonderful answer. He said, it's not that you ever became tired of Krishna. It's just that you started thinking, let me try something else. And he gave the example. Every day, you can have dal, rice, chapatis. It's not that you get tired of good dal, rice, and chapatis, but one day you start thinking, I wonder what some halva would taste like. So it's not that you become tired of Krishna, suddenly your satisfaction with Krishna is finished. No, you just start thinking, I wonder what something else would taste like. So you think about that. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In your class, you explain that when one becomes a little renounced in mind, that they begin to become concerned. What do I do with my skills, my knowledge, my contacts? So it seemed that you were alluding to saying that we as devotees, we must engage their skills, knowledge, or contacts in Krishna consciousness, since that's what they hold so close to themselves. So how is it that we begin to do that in such a way where they feel joyful being engaged in Krishna consciousness and not come to the stage where they feel similarly exploited as they did in the material world?
Needless to say, we have to deal very carefully with people so that they always feel we want to give. You know what it's like to be around someone who just wants to give. It's very intoxicating to be around someone who simply wants to give, give, give. So you know what that's like. And so that's what the people want. When they're around you and they see you just want to give knowledge, you just want to give help, you want to give them the facility so they can make the best use of their lives, they immediately notice that. And then they tell others about it. Then it takes some skill how to engage their talents and their contacts. You want to provide a situation for them where they feel happy to bring their friends. One person leads to another. Always think of the one person you're dealing with as the gateway to many other persons. And provide a facility where those persons can bring their friends and things will increase. I'll tell you the psychology. Just like now, Mumbai, amongst the sense gratifiers, is becoming known throughout the world as a party destination. Why is that? The word spreads by mouth. They've got so many nightclubs, cafes, all with different themes. This is the place to go. This is the place to bring your friends. People are thinking, what can I recommend to my friends? And this way you look a bit cool and you look a bit distinctive. You know a good place to invite your friends to. But people are thinking like that. So if devotees can provide a situation where people feel very proud to tell their friends, I go to this really wonderful place. Why don't you come along with me? It makes it easier for the people who are coming to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if they have to feel embarrassed, I'm into something that's really good, but I don't know if I can tell you about it, and I don't know if you really would want to come with me to that place. Then you lose so many potential contacts. But if you see each person who comes, who approaches Krishna consciousness as the doorway to so many others related to that person, friends of that person, then things increase. You want that person to feel proud, indeed proud. I am a part of this place. You can come with me anytime, and you'll be so nicely taken care of. What are you afraid of? Come with me. They all know me. They can all know you, too. This is like the only way I can explain it. I don't know if you can understand. The only way I can explain it, it's like as I said, in materialistic culture, there's a sense of pride when you recommend a new cafe to your friends or a new nightclub. I know none of you understand any of this. But I'm sure you can come up with a better example to fit the circumstances here. But there is a sense of pride that, come with me. I know where we can have a good time. So why can't that be used in Krishna service? Come with me. I know it is wonderful food, wonderful people, good music, nice ambience, and all they care about is you. The word spreads by mouth. Just like now they're talking about Mumbai as the hedonistic capital. The word has spread by mouth. And so that means that materialists will feel confident. We can go to Mumbai and we'll find the Kali Yuga degradation we want. They got that confidence now. In fact, so many of the newspaper articles say, if you're one of those who still thinks Mumbai is some behind the times Indian city, you're in for a surprise. In other words, don't feel paranoid. Come, enjoy. So why can't that same psychology be used in Krishna's service? Don't think that you'll feel out of place when you come with me to hear about Krishna. They'll take such nice care of you. They'll simply think of your interests. They're not trying to take anything from you. They just want to give. Come with me. And then to use business terms, then your market share increases. Just by the word of mouth, personal recommendation. Okay? Yes.
Maharaj, you are talking about this material existence, how it is burning, how it is suffering. And I've also heard that holy name is the only shelter. Baba Maha Dava Agni Nirvapanam. And I've heard Prabhupada's quotation that 99% of our spiritual life is dependent on chanting. Now, regarding chanting, we hear many times devotees say that chanting should be like an emergency because life is too short and we have to call out for Krishna. We have to have attentive chanting, hear the holy name. And then we try because we are conditioned, we are struggling. Some days we are very good chanting, but for a long period of time it's dry. And it's not very good chanting and we are struggling. And we feel that it is hopelessly beyond us. And at such times, we hear another opinion of devotees. They say, relax, you are not going to be a pure devotee overnight. Just go on, whole life you have to keep chanting, be patient. So how do we balance this need of an emergency in chanting at the same time knowing that it will be a lifelong struggle?
One has to chant the holy name with determination, but at the same time you have to be patient. These two things are not mutually exclusive, determination and patience. You chant Hare Krishna like your life depends on it, because it does. At the same time, you're patient for when Krishna wants to reveal to you in your heart more of the glories of his holy name. You can't force Krishna. You do your part in the relationship. Krishna will certainly do his, without a doubt. Our part in the relationship is day after day to chant the holy name with the proper sense of importance and determination. Krishna will do his part, without a doubt. But you cannot force Krishna to reveal himself in any way. But Rupa Goswami certifies, it will happen. Syat Krishna Nama Charitadi Satopya Vidya. The sugar candy holy name will be tasted by you if you simply practice chanting carefully every day these sweet names. It will happen. And as your chanting matures, you'll never think, now I have achieved the level of chanting I want. It doesn't work like that. You're always thinking, I can't get enough taste of the holy name. I can't chant well enough. I still, after all these years, Lord Chaitanya sets that example. He says, I'm so unfortunate. I have no raga, no attachment for the holy name. You'll never get enough. There's no platform that, okay, now I've got it. I'm chanting the holy name. You're always thinking, the closer Krishna gets, the more you think, I'm so unqualified. I have no attraction. Ultimately, you get to the pinnacle of our sampradaya, which is love of Krishna and separation. Just like Sat Gosai, six Gosamis of Vrindavan. I always like it how Prabhupada describes. Their mission was always unfulfilled. Now, shall we tell all our new guests, come to Krishna consciousness and your mission will always be unfulfilled. But that is the example of the six Gosamis of Vrindavan. Their mission was always unfulfilled. Why? They're always asking, Hey Rod, hey Braja Devi K Chalalite, hey Nanda Sumakuta. Where is Krishna? Where is he? Never, now I have Krishna, everything is fine, I have attained. No, where is Krishna? Is he on the bank of the Jamuna? Is he on Govardhan Hill? Where is he? So that is the pinnacle of our sampradaya, and therefore when you chant Hare Krishna following Lord Chaitanya, you're never going to think, now I've got it. Got my chanting down. I have attained. You're always going to be thinking, oh, so much more to be had, and I'm not getting it because I'm so unfortunate. All your life, you're going to be pursuing the holy name. Even you can be ecstatic in your chanting, and still you're thinking, I have no raga, I have no attachment. This is the Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita says this is the paradoxical nature of love of God. That the more you have, the less you think you have. This is spiritual reality. It's different from the materiality. The more love of Krishna you have, the less you think you have. And Lord Chaitanya sets the example. He says, if while I'm chanting Hare Krishna, you see tears in my eyes, you should know it's just a show. Because if I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago from separation. These things don't make sense on the material platform. So we're welcoming people to the permanently unfulfilled mission. Anything else? Thank you very much, all glory Srila Prabhupada.